This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. President Bush has said if we go to war, it will not be another Vietnam. We'll get in and out quick. Les Aspin, chair of the House Armed Services Committee, in his recent white paper, said there was a good chance of a rapid American victory in less than a month, with 3,000 to 5,000 casualties and 500 to 1,000 dead. These projections are overly optimistic, according to my guest, retired Rear Admiral Gene LaRocque. LaRocque is the founder of the Center for Defense Information, an independent research organization which analyzes military spending, policies, and weapons systems. The staff includes retired military officers as well as civilians with extensive training in military analysis. LaRocque began his naval service in 1940, and during his 31 years in active service, he commanded a variety of warships, including destroyers and guided missile cruisers. For 7 years, he worked in the Pentagon on strategic planning for the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Chief of Naval Operations. LaRocque retired from the military in 1972, the year he founded the Center for Defense Information. I spoke to him earlier today from his office in Washington, D.C. He told me he's opposed to war in the Gulf. I asked him to compare his war projections with those of the president and Les Aspin.
Well, we think the war will last at least 3 months and probably 6 months. The casualty figures be considerably higher. Doing all of our arithmetic based on our historical experience and all the tables from the various conflicts that the United States and other nations have been involved in, it would appear to us that we'll have 10,000 dead American servicemen and women, 35,000 wounded, maimed. We will also then have about 35,000 Iraqi dead military with another 100,000 wounded. We also anticipate that we will cause casualties, both dead and wounded, among 100,000 Iraqi civilians. So all in all, we will cause casualties to about 250,000 civilians and military in Iraq, and 45,000 for the United States, 10,000 of whom will be dead. It's not difficult to make a composite of once you have decided on the scenario. Our scenario, our attack is to go and capture Baghdad, and we think that comports with what President Bush has said we're going to have to do, since the status quo ante, the conditions that prevailed before this happened, he says cannot be sustained.
So you're convinced that fighting won't be contained to Kuwait? You think that the United States would go into Iraq?
Oh, it has to, because Kuwait's only 100 miles long and 50 miles wide. If we put our whole 500,000 troops into Kuwait and then made the rest of Iraq as a sanctuary, that would be militarily ridiculous. President Bush has said that we're going to have to punish aggression. You can't do that simply by marching into Kuwait, occupying Kuwait, and then sitting on the sand 10 feet away from the Iraqis in the sand on the other side of the border.
My guest is retired Rear Admiral Eugene LaRocque. He's founder of the Center for Defense Information, which is an organization of retired senior military officers dedicated to monitoring Pentagon weapon systems, spending, and policies. To give us a sense of proportion, would you compare the American deployment in the Gulf today to the American deployment in World War II in Vietnam?
Well, in World War II, we had 13 million men under arms, this is much, much smaller. However, in Vietnam, we had about the same number of troops. But the big difference is simply this. In Vietnam, it took us about 4 years to build up to 500,000. And in that time, we built up a logistics train. We had things well organized with the medical facilities. We had actually some pretty decent hospitals and hospital ships. In this situation, we have rushed over there, thrown these temporary structures up in the sand, and are improvising a logistics system to provide the food, the water, the medical supplies, the petroleum, all the spare parts for our fighting forces. And it's been a group that is put together like a sandlot ball team. In Vietnam, it was a gradual, organized, well-orchestrated build-up. This is entirely different over here, and we're going to face an entirely different and, I think, more formidable adversary.
How would you compare the relative strength and weaknesses of the United States and Iraqi military?
Well, just let me give you a couple of advantages that the Iraqis have. First of all, numerically, they're superior to us.
In what? Ground troops?
Well, in troops, total troop structure. We'll have at the most 430,000 troops on our side. That's the only troops we can count on. We can't count on the Moroccans and the Bangladeshis and the Egyptians and the Syrians. So our forces, 430,000 plus 30,000 from the British who will be fighting under our command. The others won't fight, or if they do, they'll fight independently. So we numerically, the Iraqis are superior. Secondly, the Iraqis will be defending their homeland and their families. Thirdly, the Iraqis are dug in. They have been had 5 months now to dig in the sand, and that makes a very difficult target to root out. The Iraqis have had 8 years of wartime experience. We've not had any wartime experience for those folks over there, except for the senior officers who fought in the jungles of Vietnam. The Iraqis have chemical weapons, which, even if they don't use them, presents a burden for us because we will have to be prepared for their use. I got a picture from my son over there in the desert. He didn't have a hat on. He didn't have any sidearms. By golly, he had his gas mask strapped to his belt, and it's a clear indication that we're expecting an attack. So that'll slow down our forces. And then finally, I would say that the Iraqis have an advantage because if they're killed in this, they're going to go to heaven. Our troops, on the contrary, are going to be fighting in a strange land without any battle experience. We don't know if our equipment will work. We hope it will. Our troops have been well trained. I don't want to denigrate them in any way, but when you look at this from the point of view of the purely cold, analytical situation, it means that the Iraqis are going to be a very formidable foe. We're going to have a tough time whipping them. We'll do it, but it'll take time and great cost.
Admiral Larock, I didn't realize you had a son who was in the Gulf.
Oh, yes. The other son fought in Vietnam. We're a military family.
Admiral Larock, what is your son's position in the military?
He's a commander, a Navy doctor with the Marines, right on the front lines in Saudi Arabia, ready to take care of all the people who presumably will be injured. I got a letter from him last night, and he said that there's a tremendous amount of weaponry pouring into the place, and he said it looks like we're on the verge of a major battle.
Does he share your opinion that war is inappropriate and unnecessary?
Well, he's a doctor, and he looks at it from the point of view of taking care of the troops. He's an excellent doctor. He likes his patients. I don't know that I could characterize him one way or the other. I know that my son got two Purple Hearts in Vietnam, part of his leg blown off. He's very patriotic. He never got turned off on things. On the other hand, he thinks that this war is certainly not worth it, and maiming and killing a lot more Americans.
I'd like to get back to something you were saying earlier. You said that you thought Iraqi had a superior land force, that Iraqi troops outnumbered American troops. But in the air, doesn't America have superiority over Iraq, and wouldn't America be likely to use an air attack as its first strike?
Of course. We have 1,300 aircraft over there, all very fine aircraft, and the Iraqis have about 600, although the Iraqi aircraft are all supersonic, modern airplanes from France and the Soviet Union. We will gain air superiority in the first 3 or 4 days. We'll get complete control of the air by D-plus 7 or 8 days, and we'll be able to roam freely about with our aircraft attacking targets as we wish. So it will be a very powerful component of our armed forces. But we still, at some point, are going to have to go to those sand dunes and dig out those Iraqis who are there with the heavy artillery, with tanks, with rifles, and that's not going to be easy.
It's been reported that the Pentagon's worst fear is of trench war. Why would that be their worst fear, and what would lead to trench warfare?
Well, the trench warfare is exactly the technique that the Iraqis used in the war with Iran. That's why the Pentagon's concerned, and that's what the Iraqis have been doing for 5 months now, is digging into the sand. And it's going to be very difficult for us to knock them out with air attacks or with artillery. The only way we're ultimately going to solve the problem or destroy them is to go in and root them out. Trench warfare we've not had really since, in any significant way, since World War I. But the history of the Iran-Iraq war has been how clever, how professional the Iraqis were on the defense, and the way they dug in, and sure, the Pentagon's worried about it. They ought to be.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. My guest is retired Rear Admiral Gene LaRocque, and he's the founder of the Center for Defense Information. It's an organization of retired senior military officers dedicated to monitoring Pentagon weapon systems, spending, and policies. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Retired Rear Admiral Eugene LaRocque is my guest of the Center for Defense Information. He's speaking to us by phone from his office in Washington, D.C. Getting back to desert warfare, the other day on our program we were speaking with a Soviet journalist who covered the Soviet war in Afghanistan. And he said that Soviet soldiers there had a lot of problems with the boots that they were issued. Sand was always getting in their shoes. It would cut their feet up into meat. He said that there are no maps that really help you navigate your way through the desert. Troops get lost. It's hard to identify your enemy in the desert. It's easy for them to get lost and out of your sight. Do you think that these are problems that we might be facing?
Absolutely true. We do have desert boots, however, so I would hope they don't get too much sand in the boots of the American soldiers. But that terrain is flat. There aren't any road maps. Historically, even when we fought in Europe, literally, our troops had to get local gas station maps to get from one place to the other and rely on road signs and talk to the natives. None of that's going to be available for our forces over there. Yes, we won't be able to separate friend from foe in many cases. It's compounded by the fact that not only do we have Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps forces all there on the ground under a commander which has not had those forces under his command, and they've all been drawn from disparate units around the United States to make up this team, we further compound it by having forces from about 13 countries that are there with different languages, different radio frequencies. It's going to be very difficult just to separate out a friend from foe in the air or from tanks. So it could be very complicated. Normally in a war, you have about a significant amount of fratricide, that is, friendly fire killing your own troops. Well, I think we can look for more friendly fire killing friendly troops, in this war than perhaps we've had in the past, because there's no overall commander. These are forces just been thrown in from various countries around the world, not under any single command. This is not a United Nations commander. The French, the Egyptians, the Syrians, who have make up the next large bulk of forces, they're totally independent. They'll fight or not fight when they want to and the way they want to fight. And so the best we could hope for is some modicum of cooperation so that we don't end up shooting each other.
How much are we relying on untested weapons in the Gulf? And what can some of these weapons do that we've never done before? What kind of new things can they do for us?
Well, we've never used any of these weapons that we have over there in this environment. And most of these weapons were designed to fight in Europe, an entirely different environment. We don't know whether our helicopters, the Apaches, which have always had problems anyhow, are going to function because of the sand. We don't know if our night vision glasses and goggles will work well if the sand creates a problem for them. We have the anti-aircraft Patriot missile, which is designed to shoot down airplanes. We're hoping maybe it will shoot down some of those Scud missiles also. We will be flying the F-117s, the stealth fighters. They were sort of tested a little bit in Panama. They missed their target, but that was the first time that they were used, and that's to be expected. We don't know how well they're going to do, and we don't know how well those stealth fighters will fit into the environment over there, because The stealth fighters are designed to slip in under the radar, and that will confuse our radars as well as the Iraqi radars. And our main battle tanks, of which we have probably will have at least 1,000 of those over there, we don't know how well they're going to perform in combat. We do know that for every 158 hours of operation, that M1 battle tank historically has broken down for one reason or another. We have to supply those main battle tanks with fuel. A tanker literally has to accompany every one of those tanks, or at least a tanker has to go along with the tank forces, several tankers, because those M1 tanks, our most modern tanks, take 3 gallons of fuel for each mile the tank traverses. So it takes a lot of fuel to keep those going, and if we have trouble with our tankers, it's going to be a problem.
Do you think there's any possibility that the United States or Israel would use a tactical nuclear weapon if there's war?
I hate the term tactical. A nuclear weapon is, like Gertrude Stein said, is a nuclear weapon is a nuclear weapon is a nuclear weapon. They're just vary a little bit in size, but they're nasty, brutal things. Our government, of course, has said we will not use nuclear weapons, no matter what, in the area. And I think that was maybe an unnecessary statement, because if you're going into battle, I don't think I'd want to tell an adversary you're not going to use some of your weapons. On the other hand, I think the opprobrium attached to our use of nuclear weapons in that area would be so great in the world that it would be a huge, colossal mistake to use nuclear weapons in that area. I don't know about the Iraqi or the Israelis. I don't think Saddam Hussein is going to attack Israel once the war starts, in spite of the fact that Foreign Minister Tariq Aziz said he would, because I don't think the Iraqis are so dumb as to open up another front, as it were, to entice the Israelis to attack them when Iraq will already be fighting against the Americans.
But on the other hand, if Israel did attack, the Arab alliance with the United States could fall apart, and that would be to the strategic advantage of Iraq.
Oh, it would be of some nuisance value, but not significant, because the America has enough forces over there to fight the war all by itself. As a matter of fact, some of those forces, the Moroccans, the Bangladeshis, with a couple thousand troops in the area, are probably more of a nuisance than they are of a help. They take time to give a job to and to monitor. The United States is fully prepared to fight this war all by itself. We don't need those modest forces from the other countries. They're wonderful for symbology. We like the symbolic presence because it makes us feel comfortable that we're not in this war all by ourselves, when as a matter of fact, we are.
Retired Rear Admiral Eugene LaRocque is my guest, the founder of the Center for Defense Information. How did a career military man like yourself become so averse to the idea of war?
Well, I know war. I have fought wars. I've planned wars, both the conventional and nuclear war. I know how nasty and brutal it can be. There are times when you use and need to use military force to defend your country, to support and carry out a treaty agreement, or to defend Americans in foreign countries. But to send military forces, sacrifice the lives of our troops for oil or for some vague reason, makes no sense to me. I want to save our military force for the purpose for which it was intended, and that's primarily to defend the United States. We're not the policemen of the world. It is not our job to go to each one of the 160 countries of the world and to force them to see things the way we want them done.
What do you think the most likely scenario would be if war starts? You know, how war would start?
Well, we're going to go to war again. The cannons are cocked, as I said, and the ships are in place, and the planes are ready to take off. The war plans have been made. We're going to war. And we're going to go to war, it seems to me, about the 20th of this month. Not before, but about the 20th, after we have scared the Iraqis for 4 or 5 days, then we'll suddenly attack. The war will last about 3 months. It's going to be a war which ultimately we will defeat the armed forces of Iraq, but we won't win anything. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a very costly period afterwards. I could leave you on this one note. We must never forget this, that there are in Iraq today 1 million men and women armed with rifles and have bullets with them. Even if we are able to persuade the government of Iraq to cry uncle and quit, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis will still have their rifles and their bullets, and we're going to be fighting an insurgency there for years and years to come.
Why do you think the United States would wait till around the 20th to actually attack?
Well, from a military point of view, minute the deadline is up, the Iraqis will have their fingers on the trigger. They're going to be ready there for us to attack. And I would say that it would be smart of General Schwarzkopf and smart military to threaten, to indicate as though we're launching an attack. Send planes toward the Iraqis for 4 or 5 days, keep them on their toes until they become a little careless. And then one of those times, our planes keep right on going and attack Iraq, and we'll catch them off guard that way. To me, that's a smart military maneuver, plus the fact it's pretty clear we don't have all our forces in place yet, so a few extra days would be good. Plus the fact that I think President Bush may be getting some second thoughts and say, well, maybe if I wait a few days, Saddam Hussein might cave in after all.
Is this a scenario you'd recommend, or is this a scenario you think the American military will actually follow?
I'd recommend it, and I think they're smart enough to follow it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for spending some time with us.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure being with you. I hate to be sort of a spoil sport, but it looks to me like we're going to be in combat for a long, nasty, brutal war in the next week.
My guest has been retired Rear Admiral Gene LaRocque, founder of the Center for Defense Information. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.